to the Zeitgeist 19 curated podcast, exploring the spirit of now through the lens of art and sustainability. Your hosts are Farah Pirie and Elizabeth Zhivkova.
Today, we have the pleasure to meet Vincent Demoiselle, a senior advisor on the oceans to the United Nations Global Compact, a co-leader of the Seaweed Coalition, and an author of the insightful book The Seaweed Revolution. In this positive conversation, Vincent tells us how seaweed has shaped our past and can save our future, and what are the natural big-scale opportunities it provides for tackling climate change, making us reconsider our relationship with this forgotten treasure and a source of hope.
Hi, Vincent.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me here.
Thanks very much. Hi, Elizabeth. It's great to be on your platform. And so we had the pleasure to meet with Vincent, what is it, like maybe 2 years ago in New York?
New York, yes.
And it was an amazing experience because it was during the launch of your book that came out at the Rockefeller Center the Seaweed Revolution. And I got after your presentation that I remember you were like eating these oil capsules out of seaweed.
Yeah.
I was getting super curious and I started to sort of dig into the book, which I really loved. And so maybe we start off with seaweed as a topic, and then maybe we go into plankton, which is the plankton manifesto that you have just launched now and during the New York Climate Week, and maybe we can dig deeper into these the two subjects. Vincent, on the seaweed revolution, I thought it was really a revolutionary book, and I think the name is perfect. And what I really liked also was how you go back in history on trying to sort of get the picture on that. See, we're not talking about something new. I mean, we're talking about something that has been here for centuries, and maybe also linked to actually the brain development of humans. And I think seaweed as such is really, I don't know why, but it has been really forgotten completely, at least in our sort of European area, no?
Yes, indeed. Yes, and it's sad, and I think it actually. I mean, you tell me about it, but Italy has a role into that because I think we lost contact with seaweed during the Greek and Roman domination back 12,000 years ago. After in Mesopotamia around the Mediterranean region, we made up agriculture. We lost track with seaweed, and before that, seaweed was an integral part of our diet. And we know, as you mentioned, that our brain became so big because of a massive intake of seaweeds over thousands of generations. Because the fatty acids that are characteristic to our brain growth can only be found in seaweed. So we have a big brain compared to our body mass because of a massive seaweed consumption from our ancestors. When we made up agriculture about 12,000 years ago, we sort of forgot this. And it's quite understandable because this Mediterranean region is not very good for seaweed. I mean, it's closed, it's very warm, it's polluted. You can guess that with the construction of the first cities around the Med Sea, I mean, the lot of pollution went there in the ocean and generated a lot of invasive seaweed tide, and which is why Aristotle or Virgil are depicting seaweed as the heaviest thing on Earth and the vilest, as I mean, quoting Aristotle, the vilest element on Earth. So seaweed has been lost then. And everywhere these people went, they sort of imported their focus on land resources, neglecting the ocean resources. So Vikings were very good at using seaweed. That's all they conquered US and mostly Iceland and north of Norway, because that was the only thing to eat there. But when they were colonized culturally by the Mediterranean region, Greek and Roman, they lost this tradition. And then they start also dying from scurvy on board, because they're used to on board a lot of seaweed on the boat, which prevent them scurvy because the seaweed are very rich in fatty acids and vitamin C. And the same with America. I mean, America, we know that the oldest trace of seaweed consumption is from the south of Chile back 15,000 years ago. And but they lost their tradition where they were invaded by the European. And the same goes for the Maori and for the Aborigines and everywhere. And you can see that the only exception, the only places in the world where which has not been colonized by European in the 19th century is Japan. And actually, Japan is the only place where we still eat seaweed. And we know from there that seaweed contribute to their very long life expectancy, to their very low level of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and even cancer. So it's good for Earth, and it's a very superfood. And as you mentioned, this seaweed revolution is not, there's nothing new, it's already there. I mean, we are talking about a 40 million tons production for cultivation a year. It's only in Asia, of course, but it's there already, 15 billion euros generated as revenues and so forth. So it's not a dream. I mean, it's something that is already there in Asia, but we are still to discover and understand it here in Europe and in the rest of the world.
I think it's really an amazing story. Now, since basically it was as you say, it goes back to sort of the Roman and the Greek basically to and the European expansion, like on a global level. Is there a way around it, like going backwards now? I mean, you know, I think you're describing all these cases from Asia, like, you know, which is basically the only place left where you really have a deep seaweed culture, right? And different areas. Do you see lately, like, there's growth, like, you know, we are realizing that you know, it's a superfood, you can use it for so many different things. I mean, from your book, you can also maybe list what are the different things where you can use it from, because start to build an industry for it, like, because it's just disappeared in a way.
Definitely, the change is here. So we all have to be happy about it, because Asia started only 50, 60 years ago to really cultivate seaweed. I mean, they were into wild harvest before. And I think that's what we are talking about. And that's why it's a revolution. We are talking about a shift. A systemic revolution. I mean, back 12,000 years ago in Mesopotamia, we moved from prehistory to modern history, moving from hunters-gatherers to farmers. But we did that only on land, and we are still to do it in the ocean. And that's what we are talking about. And Asia started that shift 60 years ago, roughly. And if you look at the production was 10 million tons in 2000. It is now 36 million tons. So it has more than tripled in Asia, the production. The growth is there. And why it started in Asia? Because of the population growth. What is driving this change is the fact that we are running out of resources. I mean, we have 300,000 people in addition to feed every day on the planet. We have 1 billion people starving. We know that our food systems are the biggest contributor to global warming, to biodiversity loss, to soil depletion, and to social injustice. So, and we know that we have to feed more and more people, but in the meantime, the yields are declining, the city grows bigger, and the arable land left are smaller and smaller. So there's no solution on land. We won't make it in the next 50 years or so with all these constraints. If we want to feed the world in the next 50 years, we will have to produce as much food as we ever produced as human being over the last 10,000 years. So that's not possible. Clearly, if we look at our planet, it's a blue planet. And what really was the wake-up call to me is this figure. 70% of our world is composed by oceans. The ocean covers 70% of our planet and contribute to less than 2% of our food. So we have to become seaweed farmers, and we have to repair our ocean being seaweed farmers. That's the most. So the revolution is moving. It's moving on in Asia, and it's taking ground as well in Europe. I mean, there's a growing awareness. I mean, there was 40 startups related to seaweed in Europe in 2000. There is over 200 a year right now. So it's coming. And seaweed and these startups, it's not only for food, as you mentioned. I mean, there's a wide range of applications. There are 12,000 different types of seaweed. All of them are edible. They are very different, very, very different. I keep telling that seaweed and the green and the red seaweed were the first living organism on the planet. And they are... and they evolve in all form of life. And the green seaweed gave birth to the entire vegetation we have on land. So a green seaweed is genetically much closer today to a palm tree or to a strawberry than it is than it is to a red seaweed. The difference between the red seaweed and a green seaweed is from a genetic and evolutionary perspective bigger than the difference between a fungi and an elephant. So that's massive, and it's a wide range of it's a wide range of application. So you can list at least food, of course, the healthiest food you can get. Easy to conserve because you don't need any cold chain. You can dry them. It keeps all the nutrients. It's a nutritional bomb full of proteins, zinc, iron, fatty acids, omega-3, EPA, DHA, everything your body needs. A few grams a day is enough. No need for a big seaweed salad. So it's great. I mean, of course, you need to get used to it, but we have to change our diet. We have to change our taste. And just like potatoes or cocoa bean, if you eat them raw and fresh, it may not be good. But chocolate and French fries are quite delicious. So same with seaweed. If you learn to cook them, they are delicious. If they are good for our body, because they are good for our body, they are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, best prebiotics. They are also good for the body of the animal. So as an animal feed, it will be very interesting, cutting methane emission, improving animal welfare, and so forth, and cutting the use of antibiotics. It would be also very good, and that may be the biggest potential as a biostimulant for plants, replacing fertilizers to create a circular economy. You recover the nutrients, phosphate and nutrients and nitrogen from the runoff, and then you move them back on land. And seaweed will support land growth, and that's a big potential. As you mentioned, seaweed can be a very good source of packaging to replace a lot of unsustainable material. Plastic being the first one, we see that a lot of progress has been done. Some of the bigger projects awarded as the most innovative in the world are related to seaweed to replace packaging and to replace plastic. So it's there already. Cotton and textile are to be replaced gradually with seaweed as well. No need for any water. I mean, you don't need to water seaweed. So very good. But more importantly, seaweed will repair. I mean, it will be also a source of medicines, innovation, but it will, more importantly, it will repair the ocean. It will restore biodiversity. It will sequester a lot of carbon. I mean, seaweed can grow up to 40 centimeters a day, up to 60 meters high. So we are talking about seaweed forest. I mean, and the size of seaweed in the world is equivalent to the size of Amazonia today. So we are talking about the second lung of the planet. I mean, Amazonia is one lung, and seaweed forest are the other lung. And they are disappearing at the same rate, both of them. So we have to take care. So really, biodiversity. And last but not least, and I was last week in Madagascar, one of the poorest country in the world, to visualize this and to view this. I mean, seaweed can bring source of revenues and job to coastal community in some of the poorest countries where resource from the fish industry will disappear and started already. So and it does that in a very inclusive way. I mean, both women and men. I mean, they have. We know that in Zanzibar, 80% of the seaweed revenues goes to women. I was last week in Madagascar. They were telling me, you know, before that we were living out of coal production, overfishing of juveniles, fish, and so forth. Very unsustainable activity, and we were starving basically. We had nothing to eat, and for the last 3 years, we have developed a seaweed industry here in a small island in Madagascar. And now we have 7 times more revenue per person than we used to. We have built schools. We are sending our kids to school. We are making a lot of money. I mean, reasonably, of course, but much more than we used to. We stopped our unsustainable activities. And life is so much better for everyone. And it's fantastic. And that's a very, very moving moment to be there. Because fantastic to see that what you're preaching for many years is really happening somewhere in one of the poorest countries in the world where the starvation level is the highest. So, and there it supplies food, it supplies revenue, it supplies hope for this population. And we need a lot of hope on this planet. And I think seaweed being the greatest untapped resource we have on this planet, it provides it's a great source of hope for the poorest people, but also for the next generation.
Absolutely. I love these positive stories, and also basically that you have a really big also social impact, which is, I think, one of the issues. No, I'm sure you agree on a global perspective. And if we can help the ocean, like, first of all, realize really the importance of the ocean, that without the ocean, as you say, it's impossible to make that switch in the next 20, 30 years. If you look at the numbers of fowl, I remember, I think one of the numbers that really struck me is 98%, if I'm not wrong, of the land that could somehow be used for agriculture is already used. All the water resources, basically freshwater resources, are completely used, and we're producing food for, at the moment, I think we're producing food in that could feed theoretically 15 billion people, and we're basically throwing half of it is somehow lost in the whole process chain. So we are completely inefficient. And by producing that, we're using all these nutrients, as you said, you know, all the pesticides and agriculture that basically is poisoning the soil. Yeah. And it gets poorer and poorer, and you have to wash off, and everything ends up in the ocean. So we really have a solution at our hands. And I think it's amazing when you look at solutions, when you look at positive stories like this one from Madagascar, where you can really see, as you say, you can, we're not talking about theory. I mean, this is happening. Do you see this happening somehow also in the Mediterranean? Because, I mean, one of the things that I see is the Mediterranean is really exposed to global warming, right? And the comment that I heard and I wanted to check with you is, with the global warming, somehow, you know, with algae and they are really driving on this, like sort of on this increase in the surface temperature of the waters. Does that have a positive impact or a negative impact on seaweed? Like here in the Mediterranean, we have Posidonia oceanica. I'm not sure if that counts in as, it's more seagrass. It's a plant, right? what do you think? I mean, Italy, we're calling out of Italy. It's a 7,500 kilometers of coastline in the middle of the Mediterranean with all the islands. Do you think there is potential for places like also in the Mediterranean, or usually like kelp, the seaweed is more on colder waters, right? What's the effect with global warming on that? Do you think there's a correlation?
Well, generally speaking, the effect from global warming on seaweed is very huge, and that generates ecosystem disruption. Typically, in California, there was the biggest seaweed forest in the world. The global warming somehow killed all the starfish that were eating the urchins. So the urchins proliferated, and within 6 years, they have eaten the entire seaweed forest, or 80% of it. So it's quite massive, and it's there. So there's a fire. Well, as I mentioned, I mean, we are all very worried about this Amazon taking fire. But right. but there's a fire below water, and no one really cares. So we have to worry about it, and we have to do something about it. We have to be worried about this seaweed fire below water. I mean, there's a fire below water, and no one cares because there's no image about it, and no one really cares. So yes, the impact of climate change is massive, and we have to be worried about it because it goes at an unprecedented pace. And seaweed cannot adapt. Of course, seaweed, they adapted to all type of changes over the last 2 million years, billion years, by the way. So, but they need to. That's going too fast. So we have to be worried. And it's especially true in the Med region, where you see the global warming is very, very, it's happening very quickly, and seaweed cannot adapt. So initially, I mean, the Mediterranean region is a very challenging place for seaweed production, because as I mentioned, it's still as close and no tide and no current and so forth. So it's not ideal. I mean, the Atlantic coast is much better, but it's getting worse and worse, I would say, because of global warming. And we can see that there's a risk for extinction of the very little seaweed we have. So we have to be very mindful of this. We have to find new ways. I do believe that growing seaweed there to recycle nutrients is a very good idea. We have a lot of agri runoff and waste in this region. So we should use seaweed to recover and upcycle this waste and create a really circular agriculture and a circular economy that takes into account the ocean and the sea. And I think that our biggest problem here is that we keep talking about regenerative agriculture, but we only consider the land, and we forget that most of the recycling of nutrients is made in the ocean. So as long as you don't consider the ocean in your global processes, I mean, it will not work. I mean, the geochemical processes on Earth, they mostly go through the ocean. That's the source of life on the planet, the ocean. It's where everything started. Over the last 4 billion years, there was life on our planet. But only over the last 500 million years, there was life on land. I mean, for 80% of this journey, it was only life in the ocean. That's where everything started, and mostly that was there. Maybe life on land is an epiphenomenon on this planet, and we'll stop because of global warming or whatsoever. But life in the ocean will continue, that's for sure. It will adapt, that always did. I think if we want to sustain our existence, which is at stake in the end, life on Earth we sustain in a form or another, but our existence, if we want to sustain it, then we need to understand better how to grow seaweed or to sustain biodiversity in the ocean.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, your words are really important, and I think we really need to... We need to realize that everything is interconnected, and it's the same. It's the same thing. Like, you know, it doesn't make sense to talk about climate change not without considering the ocean, right? We are talking so much about land-based solutions and planting trees and everything. That's never going to be enough, as you said. More than 70% is covered on the world. It's a blue planet, and we just can't think the ocean dictates everything from the climate to the air we breathe and life, which brings me to the next topic. I'm not sure if you want to add something more on the seaweed revolution, or we move to the next topic.
Just to add something is that we are all actors of this change. I mean, and we are all drivers of this change. So each time we eat and we drink, we vote for the world we want. So if we want this seaweed revolution to happen, it's not up to government, it's not up to big brands, it's up to all of us. All of us, we are all environmental activists every day in our purchasing decision. So let's try seaweed, let's eat seaweed, let's support products made from seaweed or fed by seaweed. I mean, let's try to make a difference in our daily choice. It's up to all of us. It's not about them, it's about us. We are all connected to the same food systems, all living on the same planet, made mostly from ocean. So let's support them and start by telling your kids, educating your kids, educating your parents, eat seaweed, try seaweed, try to buy seaweed, cook seaweed, and then we vote for the change.
Beautiful. I love that. I love that call for action. I ordered some seaweed chips last night because I found them.
That's a good start.
Exactly. So and it's cool. It's cool.
We all
it's
are
really
eating
cool.
seaweed in Japanese restaurant. I mean, exactly. Sushi, they are wrapped in seaweed, and everybody like it almost. So, so it's there. I mean, it's good, and Korea and Japan, and they know how delicious it could be.
Yeah, and it's healthy, right? As you said, it's a superfood. How can we help the Madagascar guys on their island? Are they producing seaweed to be eaten?
80% of the processed food that we eat, there is this type of extract from seaweed. But the problem, I think, is for them is that they only use 25% of the seaweed. I mean, and the rest is just waste because they have no use of it. Why? There's a lot of very interesting compounds that could help agriculture, that could feed animals and so forth, but they only use the texturing agent because that's... So I think they have to make up a solution, and we have to help them, of course, as a whole. But the same goes with Indonesia, Philippines, or Tanzania, which are much bigger producers of this type of tropical seaweed. We have to help them on using the entire biomass of the seaweed, and not only 25%. I mean, the entire biomass is very healthy, is very interesting from an economic perspective and from a healthy perspective. So, let's try to understand better. We have a lack of science, I think, in seaweed as well. So another call to action is to send some of our kids to study marine biology to help with understanding seaweed. So, I think there's a lot to do. There's so much still to be done. I mean, greatest untapped resource we have on the planet is seaweed.
And you You talked about the increase also of the industry on a global scale. So I think if there's some young guys, young chaps out there that are just studying maybe in university or looking for ideas on what to concentrate on, I think we're really talking about something that over the next, you know, probably 5-10 years is really going to see it's already seeing a huge increase. So
yeah.
Also from an entrepreneurial perspective, if somebody's interested, I think this is really one of the most interesting areas to focus on, also from an investment perspective. So
it is, yeah, it is.
I hope it's going to be a lot of this call for action is going to come out there, and I think I only see positive effects, really. I mean, it's one of these examples, one of the few examples where I can really see, and tell me if I'm wrong, but sometimes capitalism is always associated to sort of, at least on the free market, that was completely failure. If we look at the world we're living today, where basically, you know, the cost of nature, whenever you wanted to make money, there was always some kind of a cost of nature, right? And on our services. And I think this is one of the examples where you can really, you can be capitalist, you can make money, but actually you can have a super positive impact on a social perspective, on nature. And yeah. So, you know, you come home, you're super satisfied because, I mean, on the business that you're doing, it's actually yes. doing something positive for the planet.
Yes, but we have to do it right.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. And that's one of the questions I have in each presentation, especially to young people. And I'm very happy about it, about this question. How can we avoid doing the same mistakes we did on land? I mean, right. basically, we don't want seaweed to end up with monoculture, industrial farming, GMO, and all that crap. So so we need to make a resilient and regenerative seaweed business model. And I think the biggest opportunity of all and why it could work is because we start from nothing. I mean, if we want to change totally the crop industry, I mean, good luck. I mean, you're going to face a lot of resistance to change, sure. a lot of lobbies, a lot of activism, good or bad, to support or to deny changes. So so in seaweed, we start from a blank piece of paper. So it's up to all of us, and that's up to the next generation to decide to write it in a way or another. But if we want to learn from our
mistakes
and from land, then we can. Then we can start to build from scratch. There will be no resistance to change because there's nothing happening.
There's
so we can build something from scratch, very positive, a fantastic story. We can mess it up as well, of course. I mean, there's always a risk that things go wrong. I mean, in anything you do, there is a risk. But we have this opportunity to design it right and to become altogether the first generation of this planet who will manage to feed the entire world population. And we can do that while restoring biodiversity, reducing climate change, and alleviating poverty as well. So, yeah, it's a great, great opportunity. We have to do it right. We have to learn. And it's up to all of us. It's a call for of action for all of us.
Thank you, Vincent, for sharing about the valuable essence of seaweed and its potential to help people and the planet. Likewise, Jan, I find your book, The Seaweed Revolution, brilliant and incredibly insightful. Personally, I love the story of Flower, beautifully illustrating how seaweed can empower coastal communities, in this specific case, female community. You just came back from the Earthshot Prize in Cape Town. Can you share your experience at it? Have you noticed an increased global interest in seaweed?
Well, I think Africa has a great potential for seaweed, and it has been started by Flower in Zanzibar, by Tanzania, by Zanzibar in general, not only by Flower, but there's many other actors there and players. So, but there's a lot of other countries to follow. I was recently in Madagascar, who is building a very, very interesting model, very sustainable, taking advantage and learning lessons from the rest of the world. And the company there, Ocean Farmer, is doing absolutely a great job. And when we discuss with local communities there, you can realize that they are seaweed is really making a difference, enabling people to and women to send their kids at school and lifting them out of poverty, really. So I think it's very encouraging and very enthusiastic to see that. In South Africa, the model is a bit different. I think they are more using seaweed as a source of feed for abalone. The other very inspiring project in Africa is in Namibia, where we are building there, and I was there last week as well, the biggest seaweed farm in the world, offshore, I mean, the only one so far offshore benefiting from the upwelling, so the Benguela current that is giving so much nutrients on at the surface of the water. They can grow seaweed there, which is very specific. But it's very inspiring because it grows very fast. They support local communities like no one else. I mean, they already built schools and they are already employing over 100 people there. A lot of people are coming in the small place of Luderitz, which is in the middle of the desert and one of the most brutal and arid deserts in the world. I mean, they have nothing over thousands of kilometers but this small city and this meadow of seaweed right in front. I mean, it's amazing to see this this forest growing in the ocean where there was nothing before. So that's very enthusiastic. That's very, very interesting. And yeah, it's all very promising. And Earthshot Prize, I mean, I think the other key takeaway is to meet with the prince, William, who spent like 40 minutes with us discovering all the seaweed product from Africa. And how innovative is this industry? The prince is very much involved, very much interested in the seaweed. He read the book as well. He told me he loved it, which is kind of cool. And he and he's now very much involved. He's supporting some project in Wales, and he requested to meet us in South Africa and to understand what was going on there. So it's very interesting, and he committed to raise the profile of seaweed and use of his influence, of his convening power to really support this seaweed message. So it's very, very enthusiastic.
Thank you, Vincent. Incredible that people started to notice and know about the potential of seaweed. When we met in New York during Climate Week, you launched your Plankton Manifesto. Can you tell us more about it?
Well, plankton may well be the other untold story that we have. I mean, no one cares about plankton. Why? It represents 80 or 90% of the global biomass in the ocean. It sequesters like 30% of the global greenhouse gas that we are emitting. It creates oxygen. It contributes to all the water, carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus cycle. And it's the basis of all biodiversity on the planet, and that's a source of life. I mean, everything started with plankton. We are all descendant of planktonic organism, and no one really care. And then no one ever tell about. I mean, no one say nothing about them in the large conferences, in COP, in large institutions. Very little NGOs are working on plankton, so because they were invisible so far to our eyes, but now because of new technologies, we can see them, we can understand them, and we can really understand the complexity of life on this planet. So it's very, very exciting, I think. So the Plankton Manifesto was successfully launched indeed at the end of September. And now we are supporting that all around the world. We introduced it as well in the COP16 in Cali, and we try to spread this around the world. There was a lot of media articles and media attention because once again it's so important, so critical, and so under the radar so far. So it's very exciting.
Thank you, Vincent. We're working on a very exciting project together. I will not say what it is, but I would like to ask you, how do you envision the role of film in the climate conversation? And do you believe art and film are crucial in the scientific narrative?
Well, I think it's so important. I mean, and so related. And I think we have to bring this element, plankton, seaweed, into our imagination, into our culture. And it's still missing, while it's the source of everything. And we all come from there, but it's still missing. It is nowhere in our imagination, in our culture. And I think art has a great role to play in order to change the image that we have of this world, of this organism, because we need to consider them, we need to understand them, we need to see how beautiful they could be, and we need to look at them. And I think we are just starting, but it's absolutely critical, especially for the next generation, where we hope we will position plankton and seaweed very high in the in education for our kids, because it's, once again, it's so important and so basic to everything. So art has a great, great role to play. And I mean, I'm also an artist in a so-called in a parallel life. So I'm all about art, and I'm really supporting any action that could promote and support seaweed and art.
Thank you, Vincent, for this insightful conversation and for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for organizing this.